you may have heard of Jordan Sparks. You ever heard of that name, some of you? She was actually the youngest woman. At 17, she became the youngest winner of American Idol a number of years ago, not too long ago. And now she's a pretty popular singer in the pop and R&B area. But she's also a Christian. And one of the things she has a passion for is helping fight malaria in Ghana and helping earthquake victims in Haiti. Roma Downey, maybe some of you heard of her. She's a two-time Emmy and Golden Globe nominee. She was, of course, an actress and on the famous show Touched by an Angel. She's also a producer recently on the History Channel of the movie The Bible. Some of you may have seen that and some different aspects of that. But even more importantly, as kind of obviously a Hollywood star, as we might say, she's also a spokesman for Operation Smile, providing smiles for children around the world with cleft palates and cleft lips. And she's had a lot of influence, a lot of favor there in the Hollywood kind of community as a Christian. Condoleezza Rice, a lot of us know her. She was the first female African-American to become Secretary of State under George W. Bush. And now she's had a lot of influence on politics in the academic area as she is a political science professor at Stanford University. Her influence is even growing more than it even was as Secretary of State. Beth Moore. I know a lot of you probably know the name Beth Moore. She's probably one of the best-known women evangelical authors and speakers. She has touched literally millions of people in the United States and even beyond with her Living Proof Ministries, her books that have influenced women. And she talks openly. She shares. She jokes about her nose. Some of you know that. She shares about her childhood abuse. And also, she exposits the Bible very well, especially ministering to the needs and the lives of women. These women and many more, women like Bethany Hamilton, remember the surfer. Now she still serves, but she's a great spokesman for the Lord. Someone like Johnny Erickson Tata, Leslie Parrott, a counselor, Elizabeth Elliott, a missionary, now a speaker. All these women and so many more have had a great influence on our American culture and even beyond. They've gained much favor, even among those who are not believers, but most importantly, are bringing honor to their Lord Jesus Christ. I believe these women are examples of women of favor, who have the favor of God and even the favor of others upon them. We are continuing our series in Esther. And of course, the book of Esther, ultimately, is about Esther, isn't it? It's much bigger, but, you know, we see a woman here, Esther, who gains the favor of others and as a result has an impact on her culture and ultimately on the survival of her people, of the Jews of that area. But before we can get to that here, we need to pick it up right where we left off in chapter 2, verse 1. So look in your Bible, look at verse 1. It says, later when the anger of King Xerxes had subsided, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what he had decreed about her. In the NIV, we have one little word, later. I like the King James Version and the New American Standard. It gives actually a more literal translation. It says, after these things. After these things. What things? Later after what? Well, if you look at chapter 2, verse 16, and you see when Esther becomes queen, it says that she becomes queen in the seventh year of the reign of Xerxes. Well, what happened to the previous 3 or 4 years? We look in first chapter 1, it's talking about the third year of the reign. Now, all of a sudden, we're in the seventh year. What happened those previous 3 and 4 years? Well, history tells us that Xerxes did end up making that ambitious attack or campaign on Greece. Remember we talked about that? It's kind of maybe why he threw that party, preparing for that. So he goes on this ambitious, but if you know history, disastrous campaign against Greece. He's defeated. Finally. Matter of fact, he had naval defeat at Salamis in 480 BC and a humiliating defeat in Palatia in 479 BC. And so he and those who are left come back home to Persia. Defeated. And he comes home to an empty palace. There's no one there to greet him with open or loving arms. He's defeated. And now he's facing a lonely palace. Xerxes' anger against Vashti is long gone. That situation seems like years ago. Well, it was years ago. It's interesting that some believe, even Jewish historian Josephus, a very reliable historian, says from some records that King Xerxes actually regrets what he did. But he couldn't change the law. Once a law is a law, you can't change it. And so Xerxes finds himself in a new status. Yes, he's still king, but now he's also a bachelor. He's a bachelor. He now faces emptiness and loneliness of living in this huge citadel, and of course his own palace. But you know, he didn't just simply want any woman. I mean, literally, he could have, at the snap of his fingers, had any woman that he wanted. But he, as you kind of read here, he wants a wife. He wants someone that is going to be a companion, someone who would be with him long term. King Xerxes isn't drunk anymore. Remember his drunken state? Well, he's kind of finally got rid of that and come to a little bit of sanity at least. And he's certainly humbled by battle and now the situation that he's in. But you know, you can't just have any wife as a king, right? I mean, look what it says in chapter 2, verse 2 through 4. What does it say? Then the king's personal attendants proposed this. They saw this depressed king and said, okay, well, let's make a search. Let a search be made for beautiful young virgins for the king. Let the king appoint commissioners in every province in the realm to bring all these beautiful girls into the harem at the citadel of Susa. Let them be placed under the care of Haggai, the king's eunuch, who is in charge of the women, and let beautiful treatments be given to them. Then let the girl who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti. This advice appealed to the king, and so he followed it. Well, of course, the new queen couldn't just be anyone. It had to be a beautiful woman, right? And so begins this search, or what some have called even this contest for a new queen. Matter of fact, what I see it as the original installment of The Bachelor. Now, some of you probably have heard, or maybe many of you have even watched The Bachelor, right? On TV, I think maybe it's still going on, I don't know. It's never a show that I really liked or gotten into, but my two girls, when they were in high school and college, watched it often. And I would go in there, and they'd be watching it, and as a good, you know, loving dad, I would make fun of them. And just mock them, and, you know, kind of just make fun of the whole situation. You see all the stuff that's going on there. And every time, you know, Dad, get out of here, and they kick me out, you know, finally they get, leave, we're trying to watch our show. Kick me out of the house, kick me out of the room, whatever. But it's interesting. We see here in Esther 2 that Xerxes has this kind of contest. He has this bachelor show, we might say. They gathered the most beautiful unmarried women and brought them to the palace. Look what it says in verse 8. Skip down to verse 8. It says, when the king's order and edict had been proclaimed, many girls were brought to the citadel of Susa and put under the care of Haggai. Esther also was taken to the king's palace and entrusted to Haggai, who had charge of the harem. It's interesting, it says there that Esther was taken. It's probably safe to say that she and probably maybe most of the girls did not go willingly. Okay, it wasn't something that, you know, they probably went reluctantly. They had lives of their own. Maybe they even had, you know, young men that they had been courting or that their family had been planning for them to marry. I don't know. But once they were there, we see this kind of extreme version of The Bachelor. This contest, this kind of battle to be the new queen of Persia. Stop and imagine. Now, those who have watched The Bachelor or The Bachelorette or whatever, you probably don't have to imagine too hard. It's just a bigger version of that. Can you imagine the pettiness that's going on behind the scenes? The jealousy, the rivalries of these women behind the scenes? And here they are. They are basically given a year, a whole year, to do all that they could to become as beautiful, as charming, and as seductive as they could to win the heart of the king. And then they would, each one of them, up to a certain point, would have a night with the king to try to win his favor. You know, unfortunately, in many ways, times don't change, do they? Too many of us, too many people are obsessed simply by the outward beauty of someone. You know, there was a woman who was working in her front yard, and a moving van came, and all of a sudden, a van behind it with the family that was there, and the husband and wife got out, and they kind of waved at the neighbor, and went over and introduced themselves, and the woman was really kind of embarrassed, because here she was working in her yard, and she had all kinds of dirt on her face and her clothes, dirty old clothes, you know, like we wear out, and she's like, met them, it's just like totally embarrassed. Well, a few days later, the neighbors decided to invite this wife and her husband over for, you know, time to meet them over to their new house. Well, this was a great opportunity to make a better impression upon those new neighbors. And so she decided, she went and colored her hair. She put on a new girdle, tightened things up, glossed her lips, put on eyeshadows, false eyelashes, polished her fingernails, popped in some brand new colored contacts to make her eyes just pop out. She stepped in front of the mirror and admiringly told her husband, "Now the new neighbors can see the real me." How many of us are like that in some way, huh? But you know, it's into this kind of mindset, but even more extreme, that Esther is introduced here in the story. It's into this environment that Esther, God's lovely star, shines the brightest. Why do I say star? Remember Esther's name, what her name means? Star, right? It's interesting. She comes and she, as we'll see, begins to shine in a variety of ways. Look at chapter 2, verse 7. Look at verse 7. This is actually the first time we're introduced to Esther. It says, Mordecai had a cousin named Hadassah, that's her Hebrew name, who he had brought up because she had neither father nor mother. This girl, who is also known as Esther, was lovely in form and features, and Mordecai had taken her as his own daughter when her father and mother died. We're introduced to Esther, and we see here that she was beautiful. She was a beautiful orphaned foreigner. Esther had been living pretty much, you know, just a normal, uneventful life until now. But as we'll soon see, Esther was defined by more than just her beauty. That's what most people saw first, was her amazing beauty. But as we'll see, her beauty was much deeper than her skin. Her beauty is more than skin deep. You know, from the perspective of Jewish wisdom and some Jewish writings, Esther's character is far more significant than simply her outward beauty. You know, down through history, there have been an endless succession of courageous and visionary women, of self-sacrificing and virtuous women. We talked about a number of them at the very beginning, those who are even in our culture, in our time. But you know, the Bible also shows about women, women whose beauty was more than skin deep. How many of you know the name Jochebed? Just curious, how many Bible scholars here? Jochebed. Anybody know Jochebed? Few of you? You probably know, once you hear, you know who she is. Moses' mother. Think about Moses' mother who saved her son's life, really risked her own life to save her son, and then even had, as God showed his favor, was able to even raise her son in many ways and help him become the man that he became. Hannah. Hannah was a godly and devoted mother to Samuel, who she dedicated to the Lord. Samuel had a great influence on Israel. Deborah. If you know the story of Deborah, who helped lead Israel to defeat their enemies. People like Ruth, you know Ruth in the Old Testament. What about Elizabeth? Elizabeth, who in her old age gave birth to John the Baptist. And of course, Mary, the mother of Jesus, who said God had his favor upon her. And then we listen to see other people in the New Testament, like Mary and Martha. Remember? Sisters who kind of had a little bit of rivalry, but both who had amazing used by God and were friends of Jesus. We see Lois and Eunice, a mother and a daughter, a grandmother. We see Priscilla and Lydia, and the list goes on. Each of these played an important part on God's plan, and left a mark on their world, recorded in God's word, the impact of women. Esther also was used of God. Yes, her outward beauty would be the first thing that people noticed, would be the reason why she was brought into the palace, into the citadel, during this search for the queen. But there was something more going on in Esther than simply her outward beauty. Let me share with you, let me look with you at a recurrent theme. Interesting, I was just reading this. I'd never really seen it before. There's a recurrent theme in Esther's life. Look in your Bible at verse 8 and 9. And then we're going to skip down to verse 15 and then the beginning of 17. Look what it says in verse 8 and 9. We read the first part, verse 8. Let's read again. When the king's order and edict had been proclaimed, many girls were brought to the citadel of Susa and put under the care of Haggai. Esther also was taken to the king's palace and entrusted to Haggai, who had charge of the harem. The girl pleased him and won his favor. Immediately, he provided her with her beauty treatments and special food. He even assigned her 7 maids selected from the king's palace and moved her and her maids into the best place in the harem. Interesting. Verse 15, when the turn came for Esther, the girl Mordecai had adopted, the daughter of his uncle Abihail, to go to the king, she asked for nothing other than what Haggai, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the harem, suggested. And Esther won favor of everyone who saw her. Verse 17, now the king was attracted to Esther more than any of the other women, and she won his favor and approval more than any of the other virgins. You see a theme there? A word that sticks out? She gained favor of all those that she came in contact with. Esther was truly what we might call a woman of favor. First it was Haggai, the eunuch, the one, the man who was in charge of basically all the women that came in. And she found this, he was immediately attracted to her, not by her beauty, because there's a lot of beautiful women, but by something else. We'll look at that. She was also found the favor of the king's court, basically those that are influential to the king. She meets them. And all of a sudden, there's something different about her. And then ultimately, King Xerxes himself. She had a character. Clearly, something stood out that allowed her to have the favor of those around her. She had character that caused her to stand out above others. You know, something very similar happened to another person who was a foreigner in a distant land. Joseph in Egypt. Maybe you remember that. Look at Genesis 39, 20 through 23. It says this, Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him what? Favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care. Why? Because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. You know what? I believe that's exactly what God was doing for Esther as well. That God was allowing other people to see her and granting her favor in their eyes. And as I mentioned, I believe this favor came from her character. Yes, Esther's outward beauty was certainly part of who she was, but even more so was her character. She stood out to Haggai. I mean, some people say there was as many as like 400 young ladies that were brought. That's all, 400 ladies that were brought into the palace there. And she stood out. One of the reasons I think she stood out was because of her authenticity. She was authentic. Why do I say that? Well, you can't just read this chapter, but you got to know the rest of the story, which I know you've all read Esther, so you know. If not, you better catch up. But we see here that she knew who she was. She was Jewish. She was a young, God-fearing woman. And she knew where she was coming from. She knew her heritage, where her family was from, who they were. She knew and believed, as we see later, that God had his hand upon her life. And she entrusted her life to him. We read that when she went to the king's court and later to the king himself, that it's interesting, she didn't take all this extra stuff. They were allowed to take whatever they wanted. It says that she didn't really take any of that stuff. She took the advice of Haggai, who knew the king. But she went simply as herself, I believe. Modest and authentic for who she was. And I think she modeled to the best of her ability in those circumstances what Peter wrote to the church in 1 Peter 3 through 5. It's interesting, when he writes us, he may have been thinking about Esther. You'll see what I mean here in just a minute. Look what it says, 1 Peter 3 through 5. He's writing to the church, to Christians here. We're in the New Testament, but it applies then and now. He says to women, he's talking to women in the church, your beauty should not come only from outward adornment, such as braided hair and wearing gold jewelry and fine clothes. Instead, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. For this is the way the holy women of the past, who put their hope in God, used to make themselves beautiful. Esther was doing her best to be authentic to who she was, to her faith in God. You know, this is something that young women, that women should seek to cultivate, I believe, within each one of them. To become a woman of authentic character. Yes, outward beauty is good and it's fine, but to really seek to develop an inner character, an inner spirituality of following God. You know, not focusing, not being, you know, just totally encompassed and on the outer beauty of things, of what the world says. You know what? This is how you're supposed to look. And we see on TV all the time, right? In magazines, well, this is what a beautiful woman looks like. But rather, to seek beyond the superficial, to be discontent even with the superficial and have a deepening desire for spiritual authenticity and beauty. I think Esther is a model of that. An important aspect of her character also, we see a deepening character in her honoring her father, her adopted father, right? Mordecai. Twice in chapter 2, it says that Esther did not reveal her nationality, didn't reveal her family background. Look at chapter 2. Look at verse 20. This one explains it the best. Verse 20. It says, but Esther had kept secret her family background and nationality, just as Mordecai had told her to do. For she continued to follow Mordecai's instructions as she had done when she was, as she was being brought up. We see Esther obeying and honoring her father, Mordecai. Now, obviously, we know that honoring our parents is something that's very important. It's one of the Ten Commandments, right? To honor our father and mother. It's interesting. We see some wisdom from Proverbs 1:8 that says this, listen, my child, to your father's instructions and to your mother's. Do not forsake your mother's teachings. Her obedience to and honoring of Mordecai becomes actually a very important part of this plot, of this story. If she hadn't listened to him, things would not have turned out the way that they did. Her willingness to, in a sense, keep a secret was not only honoring to her father, but it was also a trait of wisdom. There was also some wisdom in there. She understood the wisdom of times of being silent and of loyalty. Proverbs 12:23. It says, a prudent man keeps his knowledge to himself, but the heart of a fool just blurts out his folly. She not only honored her father because it was the right thing to do, but she also kept those secrets because she knew her culture. The anti-Semitism, the hate against Jews, was still a part of her culture that she was in. She was a minority, and we're certainly going to see that here in the weeks to come with Haman. But Esther had the character trait that many of us, quite honestly, should seek to develop, and that is of knowing when to be silent and knowing when to be loyal. See, she could keep a secret. She could keep her tongue. She wasn't prone to gossip, at least about this. She was going to be loyal to her family. She wasn't going to just talk to talk, which, you know, some of us who like to talk sometimes have that problem. We say more than we should sometimes about those around us. But she is loyal to those closest to her. And we see this even later when she becomes queen. That when Mordecai finds about a plot to kill the king, she honors Mordecai. And she goes to the king and tells him. And she gives credit to Mordecai, but she also honors the king and shows her loyalty to her new husband. It's a great trait. It's an important trait to have, especially as a spouse. To honor, to be loyal to your spouse, to your family, to your closest friends. So how are you doing in that area? I mean, think about your close relationships. Think about the times maybe you've hurt somebody or said something you shouldn't have. Can you learn from that? Do you have honor and loyalty to those that are closest to you? Esther was a woman of favor. Her beauty was much more than her outward appearance. She was a woman, I believe, of deepening character. Not perfect, but she was authentic. She was honoring. She was loyal to those closest to her. And people around her, even people who didn't know her very well, saw this in her. And they showed her honor. And they gave her favor. She gained favor. She gained, what's another word for favor? The support, the kindness, the blessing of being with her. And as we'll see, God used her in many ways. Used her in great ways. You know what? God can use anyone who has honorable character for him. You know, when people see this authenticity in your life, in your faith, as you claim to be a follower of Christ, honoring those around you, showing wisdom in how you talk, and your loyalty to others, it will bring us opportunity to have favor in their eyes. And I believe it will open up opportunities for us to share about God in our lives and for God to use us. When people see that, when they see the authenticity in our lives, that loyalty to God and to those in our family and their friends. Even in difficult situations like Esther was in, God can still work his plans. He can still work out his purposes in our lives. For Esther, part of her plan, part of God's plan for her, was that she was to become queen. Of all the young women, she would become queen. Look at verse 17 again. Chapter 2, verse 17. Now the king was attracted to Esther more than to any of the other women, and she won his favor and approval more than any of the other virgins. And so he set a royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Esther was chosen queen, and this would begin a new adventure in her life. From an orphan foreigner now to the queen of Persia. One of the things that many believe that she did when she became queen, sometime soon after that, was that she had an influence on her continued love and support for Mordecai, her loyalty to Mordecai. Look at verse 21 to 23. This is important, the end of the chapter here. It says, during the time Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthanai and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the door, became angry and they conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. But Mordecai found out about the plot and he told Queen Esther, who in turn reported it to the king, giving credit to Mordecai. And when the report was investigated and found to be true, the two officials were hanged on the gallows. All this was recorded in the book of annals in the presence of the king. Many believe that Esther used her position to help Mordecai get appointed to this position of kind of authority and influence. People at the gate, you see this, when you're at the gate, what does that mean? Well, that was kind of a place of entering into the citadel. It was a place where people came to get their disputes resolved, kind of like a judge. And Mordecai was there. And we see this pivotal place that he was put, that God put him there. And we see Mordecai with this plot that is foiled, right? He finds out about the assassination, he reports it to Esther, and she reports it to the king. And what happens? Well, they find out it's true. And the plan is stopped. And it says it's recorded in the book of annals. Interesting. But Mordecai isn't rewarded right away. I mean, usually when something like that happens, it's rewarded right away. Why? Well, we know, right? We know why. Because God has a plan. As we're reminded throughout the story of Esther, it's interesting, God's name is never mentioned, right? We talked about that the first week. And yet God, we see God throughout this entire story. Once again, we see God in his providence overall. God's plans aren't hindered when the events of life are brought about by sinful or selfish people, whether it be a king or an evil person or whoever. God's plans aren't hindered. God's providential hand is always at work. Let's just review real quickly about the things that God was doing. Just here in chapter 2, we see his providence in that Esther receives favor, right? Just like Joseph in Egypt, she receives favor from Haggai, from the king's court, from the king himself. God is at work. God works and gains her favor. God is at work today. And God can work in your life if you are allowing him to gain favor into other people's lives as well. I believe God has blessed us to gain favor among the school district. I really, over the years, it's not something that came at once, but over years, they've seen us and we've gained favor. We see God's providence in that she was chosen queen, right? Of all the maybe 400 young women, her of all was chosen. Proverbs 21:1 says, the king's heart is like channels of water in the hand of the Lord. He turns it wherever he wishes. God had a plan. He wanted Esther to be queen. She became queen. She was chosen. God is at work. We see here also with Mordecai's overhearing and revealing of the assassination. He was put at the right place at the the right time. What a coincidence. No. Not a coincidence. And then we also see that it's recorded in the book of Annals. And we'll see soon in the weeks to come the importance of that. But what we've seen here and what we know in chapter 2 is that God is at work. God is at work. He has overseen the shaping of kingdoms. He has overseen the shaping of kings. He's never surprised by what humanity does. He is moving and working in all things. See, those even involved in a plot against God are still under God's plan. We saw it with Jesus himself, right? Even when Jesus was crucified, it says this went according to God's plan. But never doubt this. This is important. God is present. God is in control. God is providential over all. And the truth is that this should help us to have a greater trust in God. To know these things should help us have a greater faith in God. Trust that God knows and is in control of all that's going on, even the hurtful things. We need to know that God can use each one of you. You know, just like God uses the women of our culture, right? Like a Jordan Sparks or a Condoleezza Rice, a Beth Moore, a Johnny Erickson Tata. They've gained much favor and influence in our culture, but you don't have to be famous, okay? Talk to the women here for a moment. You don't have to be famous to have an influence as a woman of favor. You can have it right here in our community. You can have it right in the school that you work in or that your kids go to. You can have a great influence at your place of employment with our kids and the youth that come to our church or to our youth group. You can have it with your husband, with your children, certainly. In anywhere that God may place you. God calls you to be a woman of favor. To look at Esther as an example of someone that God used, even though she wasn't necessarily looking for it. But you know what God calls all of us, women and men, to gain much favor and influence, all to be used for the honor and glory of Jesus Christ. Amen?